This is Kel Wepperson, book author and team owner of Paranormal Investigations of Oklahoma. You are now listening to Ghosts in the Valley podcast.
Ghost in the Valley podcast. I'm your host, Al Cooley. Today I have a return guest, E.E. Holmes. E.E. Holmes has a brand new book out called Rise of the Coven, book 8 in the Gateway series. And I'll be right back with my conversation with E.E. Holmes right after these brief messages.
This is Weird on the Rocks, a podcast that explores the weird, unusual, strange, and unexplained, all while getting our drink on. Join me every other Monday as I share a different cocktail and discuss true crime, paranormal stories, unexplained phenomena, conspiracy theories, and much more. Find Weird on the Rocks on social media, the website weirdontherocks.weebly.com, and listen on all of your favorite podcast apps. And don't forget to cheers and stay weird.
Today I'm excited to have back on the show one of my favorite authors, E.E. Holmes. Welcome back, Emily. It's been almost a year, since you've been on last year. It's hard to believe.
It has. Thanks so much for having me back.
And since that time, that this past year, you've got a new book that you just released in your Gateway Tracker series, or I've read 10 out of the 11. So I have one more. So I have to read The Rise of the Coven yet, the new one. I have it. I just have to read it. I was hoping to have it read before you came on.
I've got one of those endless TBR piles myself, and it's, you never get to the bottom of it. It just keeps getting bigger.
Yeah, because last time you were on the show, I think I told you I was writing my first novel, finally finished. So now it's off to getting it edited and going from there.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's been keeping me busy too. I didn't know it was going to be so hard, because when you're writing in past, what I'm writing is took place in 1967 through 1971. You're trying to write in the present tense of 50 years ago.
It really messes with your brain, doesn't it?
Right. This past, present. I give you a lot of credit, man, for all the books you have out, and they are phenomenal. I'm going to put the links in the bottom of this episode where you can go to E.E. Holmes' website and check out all her books she has available. They are fantastic. So I listened to a portion of The Rise of the Coven, the audio. That the audiobook you have out on that. And I tell you what, the narrator, Lisa Brown, she did a phenomenal job on the character. Just a 4-minute section that's on there on her accent for even like for Finn, to pronounce all these names.
Yeah, I know. I didn't make her job very easy. I didn't make her job very easy for her, did I? What? I throw all that Gaelic in there.
Yeah, she's probably like, hey, how do you pronounce this word?
We always have a debrief, we always, prior to starting, she'll read through, she'll send me questions. I will reply. I'll send links to pronunciation guides and things like that if she needs it. But she's done so many Gateway books for us now, and she's just so great. I remember when I was initially looking, because it's the very first audiobook I produced on my own, and so I had to pick a narrator, and that was one of the really probably the most fun part of the process, was listening to all the auditions of the narrators and trying to hear who to me felt like the best fit for the characters. And of course the accents are crucial. We've all been subjected to, whether it's live performances or audiobooks or, wherever, we've all been subjected to bad badly done accents, and it can be, it's so distracting. And it can be really, can kind of take away from your enjoyment, kind of take you out of the moment, you know, of what you're listening to, and it stops you from getting lost in it the way that you would want to be. So, she's just so wonderful. I just love her. I hope she can always do all the Gateway books.
Has she done all of them so far?
She has done all except for, so like I said, I produced the first book, Spirit Legacy, the original first book of the Gateway Trilogy, with her. And then I was offered a traditional publishing audio contract after that. And so the second two books in the trilogy were actually narrated by somebody else. But she has since done all of the Trackers books. So by and large, if you're going to listen to Gateway books, you're going to get Lisa, and it's a treat.
Yeah, you know, because sometimes, like, you know, like you see, you can get lost in the, just in the audio. You know, my wife and I did a road trip a few years ago, and we picked up some audiobooks to listen to on our vacation, and we turned one off because I couldn't stand the narrator's voice.
Yes.
I can't explain it. It was just,
it didn't work for you. It just didn't work for you.
Because sometimes it makes a big difference on, like you say, the pronouncing the names just right, you know, and that can throw you, you know, can throw you off, or the accent, like you said, you know. Yeah. Yeah. I think she did a great, great job.
Yeah. She's wonderful. She's wonderful. Definitely recommend her for sure.
Now, for my listeners, Emily, can you take us through some of the characters in the Gateway series? I mean, because when you add a character, do you feel like you have to take a character away so you don't have too many characters?
I get what you're saying. It's tricky because if you are going to kind of, if you're going to have lots of adventures out and about, as my characters do, if you start to tack too many people onto your core group, it can get cumbersome. I mean, there are actually moments as a writer where you're writing a scene and you're like, oh shoot, I forgot so-and-so was there. Like, now I got to work them into the dialogue, and you go back and have to rework it like 50 times. So it can be tricky. What I really try to do is, you know, kind of stick to my core. I've got my, what I think of as my core five, right? I've got Jess, Hannah, Milo, Finn, and Savvy. Uh-huh. I think of as kind of my core group. But of course, there are offshoots of that. You know, there are other characters that are regular characters that come in and out. Hannah has a significant other, Kiernan. He's kind of starting to get woven into the story a bit more. It just kind of depends. It depends on what part of the story I'm trying to tell. But I have so many secondary characters that I love, that I love to bring back in to things. It's just, sometimes it's clear that I can't take everybody along for the whole ride. It gets too cumbersome, right? It becomes a clown car of a book, right? Like trying to write these scenes, and you've got like 24 people present. It's just like, it's not, you can't do it. So you kind of have to pick and choose where certain characters pop up again. But in a way, that's kind of nice too, because I know that a lot of these other secondary characters like Fiona, for example, characters like Tia, characters who aren't necessarily central to the action, but are these periphery characters that people have interacted enough that they miss them when they're not there. So I really just try to find ways to have those characters pop in and out where I can. Just so, you know, it's like I haven't forgotten about them, but they're not central to this particular storyline. I don't like them to just kind of disappear. But at the same time, like I said, it turns into a clown car situation if you try to take everybody along for the whole adventure every time.
Can you take my listeners through between the Great Gateway, what you call the Gateway Trilogy, and the Gateway Trackers?
Right.
There are three books in the trilogy, and
I'm working on the ninth right now.
There's eight right now released through the Trackers.
Yes.
Correct?
Correct.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So that's a lot of books, you know.
Sure is.
So can you take, in a nutshell, can you tell my listeners what it's all about from 1 through 11?
Sure, sure. As you know, and unfortunately writers, you know, we have to do this frequently. You know, you write a 100,000-word book and then they say, okay, great. Now explain it to us in 5 sentences. And your brain just like, you're like, I can write 100,000 words. But if you want me to write 100 words summarizing it, my brain breaks, right? Like I can't, it's too hard, right? But basically, the original Gateway trilogy is about a young woman, Jess Ballard. She's on the precipice of kind of starting her independent life, going off to college. She has a tragedy in the unexplained death of her mother. And that tragedy sets off a series of events in her life that lead her to come to realize that she can see ghosts. And so the first book is really just her trying to understand where this ability has come from, why it has come up all of a sudden, what to do about it, how to navigate it, how to handle it, and then come to find out there is a long, deep, dark family history as to why this is true, why this is an ability that she has. And it is her legacy, you know, her family legacy, hence the title of the book, right? Spirit Legacy. And then the rest of the trilogy really is her coming into that legacy, stepping into her own power, accepting that this is her life now, mm-hmm. and realizing that she can't walk away from it. And she has a responsibility to the spirits that she can see, to the spirits that come to her for help. And she can't just turn her back on them because she doesn't want it to be true. You know, she has to, you know, there's that, you know, line about, you know, sometimes that the people who are the least interested in being leaders, but then are thrust into those positions, right? And find they take up the mantle and find that they wear it well. I my brain is blanking on where I've heard that quote before. I've heard it lots of times before where sometimes a person who's the most hesitant to step into a role like that can actually be the best suited for it. So it's her coming of age story of stepping into this legacy and trying to do it justice while not losing herself in the process. Mm-hmm. And then the Gateway Trackers book really were just a spinoff of that. I finished the trilogy. I thought, this is the story. This is the story I had planned. And then readers said, what's next? What do they get? You're not just going to leave it there, are you? What about this? What about that? What about that? You know, as much as I tried to wrap things up in a satisfactory way so that you could put the 3 books down and say, okay, like I read those. That was a complete story. I feel good about that. There were, of course, lots of places I could have taken it next. And that's what the readers took up and said, well, what about this? What about that? What about this character? What about doing this? And I thought to myself, okay, maybe there's more story here. And so that's where the idea for the Gateway Trackers series was born. And my original thought was just to have each book be a different tracker's case. So for people who are unfamiliar with the books, the trackers are basically, well, how do I want to put this? They're almost like spiritual caseworkers, right? It's like, you know, in the world of the Durapinin, which is the group of people that Jess belongs to by her bloodline, these people who can see and communicate, help cross ghosts over to the other side. They have within their structure this group of people called trackers who are responsible for following up on disturbances, issues that are arising between the world of the living and the world of the dead and doing what they can to resolve those issues. So my thought was almost to treat it like a mystery series, right? Where each book is almost a standalone, you know, but with the familiar characters, and what you're doing is each one is a different case almost, mm-hmm. right? But of course, once I got back into it, there were so many threads and I started pulling them together. And really, I think the series holds together more as an interlocked series than it does as individual books. So I would say if anyone's thinking of picking up that series, definitely start with the trilogy and then go through them in order. Because as much as I started out thinking each case would be separate, my little complex world building author heart got a little too into it, right? And I started putting things together in a way that was very chronological, and therefore each book building on the next. And so you really do need to read them in order.
Do you find that it's hard to get rid of a character? Because, you know, because they end up like being like family, you know?
Yes. Oh, yes.
You know, because one of my favorite characters and is the professor, you know. I can almost put myself in that his office when Jess, you know, goes in there and meets him for the first time, you know. You know, yeah. I just, you know, so some of these characters, you know, once they're gone, like you say, you know, Jess and Hannah are basically moving the spirits on, mm-hmm. right? And yes. I just find, you know, my sister, when she first turned me on to your books, I says, well, I don't know, you know, it's just you're into paranormal. I'm telling you, dude, you have to read these books or they're really good, you know, and they're well written. I said, okay, you know, I give it a shot, you know. After I've read that first book, now I'm 11 books later, you know. So do you find there's an end in sight anywhere, or are you going to go with like another series off of that?
So that's funny you say that. So I am continuing with the Gateway Trackers books as of right now. And my feeling is I will continue writing them as long as I have fully fleshed ideas that I feel excited about. I don't want to write the series beyond that because I think authors get into that trap sometimes where they kind of run out of road with a series and then the books go down in quality, the storylines mm-hmm. aren't as good, they get repetitive, and it's just, I don't want that to happen. I love these characters too much. I don't want to, you know, run them into the ground, as it were. So I will be continuing to, you know, write Trackers books. As I said, I just released one, and I am on the back third of one now that I'm trying to get through the draft of by the end of the month. I don't know how, but somehow there are lots of different avenues I could take with the world of the Gateway. I've established that this, you know, ancient society of Durapine and these people who have this ability, they've been around for centuries. That opens a lot of avenues to play with. You know, I'm toying with the idea of a spin-off series. I love historical fiction. So I'm toying with the idea of setting a spin-off series with a different clan and a different Durapinin as a central character, maybe set, you know, like a gas lamp fantasy, like Victorian England, for example, might be a fun place to land that, you know, the world of spiritualists and seances, and, you know, that could be really fun. There are, and actually my next project, this is the first time I've talked about it. So this is a Ghosts in the Valley exclusive, I guess.
But, oh, awesome.
but it's, I do have a spinoff series in the works, hoping to get my first cover design back from my designer, maybe even today. I'm not going to give away too much, but I take a minor character from Rise of the Coven, and I'm using them to bridge into a new series centering on a different group of characters. It exists within the world of the Gateway in the sense that we know these two things coexist in the mm-hmm. same universe, but it really is a very different take, and it centers on witchcraft.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So that is my next. And I was just a few weeks ago, I was up in mid-coastal Maine, Camden, Maine, doing some location research. And I'm really looking forward to kind of embarking on starting to build this related but somewhat separate world. They're tangential to each other. There may be, I'm toying with the idea in the future, once things get going, of maybe having some fun crossover, having Gateway characters kind of show up, you know, in,
that'd be cool.
Yeah, but it's fun. There's a little bit of an Easter egg in the opening of this new series, which will connect the two together. And then I will be thinking of it as a separate but tangential adventure, but delving into other kinds of magic, other kinds of spells, other kinds of paranormal activity, just coming at it from a different place.
The new series is basically not replacing the Trackers, right? You're going to have the Trackers plus this one.
I sort of see myself maybe releasing books alternately. You know, we'll get a new book in this new series, then we'll get a tracker's book, then we'll get a new series book, then maybe another tracker's book. It's hard. A writer's brain is a very messy, glorious place, in the sense that, you know, you never really know what's going to rise to the surface.
I was just going to say your brain must be like this huge, you know, because I mean, where do you come up with these characters? I mean, because you got to have new characters for this new spinoff, right?
Yeah, that's right.
How do you come up with your characters?
Well, I have a feeling there's a lot of space in my brain taken up by that stuff that should probably be taken up by other more practical things. I mean, well, you know, this is why
I'm really.
I am a notoriously scatterbrained. I am forgetful. I am disorganized. I am, you know, all of those things are true of my brain, but I like to think that all of that helps throw things together in a way that is creative. It's messy, but it's creative. And I think as long as I can keep pulling ideas out of the out of the chaos, I'll be all right.
Now, do you find a certain time that you do write, any time better than another?
Sure. Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm sort of a slave to my kids' school schedule. You know, I've got a second grader and a fifth grader, so I write when they're not home is mostly what happens. And so I typically on a typical week, you know, I get them off on the bus and my work day starts, and it continues until about 2 o'clock when I got to jump in the car and go pick them up, you know.
Right.
However, I am not a morning person. I have never been a morning person. I don't think I will ever be a morning person. And so I find that when I am doing extra work or I am not being held to my kids' schedule, I would say I work better in the afternoons and the evenings than I do first thing in the morning. A brain that messy takes a little while and a bit of coffee to wake it up. So
I write mainly in the morning because I'm a morning person.
Yeah.
So I find I have that time there where I can, you know, come up with ideas. But 3 o'clock in the morning, oh my God, I forgot about that, you know. Right. So do you do that? Do you get up, you know, in the middle of the night and write, you know, jot down something that?
I do. I sure do. I text things to myself. In fact, there was The Rise of the Coven. I couldn't sleep. One night in the middle of the night, I woke up. This idea came to me. The general idea of the book, I already knew generally what I was going to do with it, but something very specific popped up in my brain. I sat up. I was like, I have to make sure I get this down because I'm going to wake up in the morning and I'm going to go, what was I talking? What was I thinking? I mean, my brain will not hold on to that till right. The morning time. There's no safe place in here to file that away. Right. So I woke up, I pulled out my computer. Sometimes if it's a quick thing, I'll just text it to myself so I can see it in the morning. But I pulled out my computer and I, all of a sudden from like 2 to 4:30 in the morning, I outlined that whole damn book like that. I mean, that thing just came together in my brain in a way that things don't generally come together in my brain that cleanly, you know? And so it was great. And it allowed me to jump back into that series, which I wasn't entirely sure I was going to do. I was really kind of happy with how I wrapped things up at the end of Gift of the Darkness. So, which was the seventh book in the Tracker series, was kind of where I had seen things kind of maybe not ending permanently, but at least taking a break. And I went off and I wrote another series, another trilogy, a Gaslamp fantasy trilogy called the Rift Magic Saga, which is just totally unrelated to the Gateway books. But it was an idea I had brewing in my head for a very long time that I finally took the time to work out. Mm-hmm. And so I hadn't necessarily been planning to come back to the series. And I found that having that outline, that middle of the night burst of productivity, really helped launch me back into that world. It was really helpful to have that because I'm not exactly in writing. People tend to fall into two categories. They call them plotters and pantsers, right? Plotters, of course, being people who are very meticulous, laying out every detail. Pantsers being flying by the seat of their pants, right? I tend to be somewhere in the middle, maybe leaning a little more toward Panther, but I always do have a roadmap of where things are going. I just allow myself perhaps more license for detours than your typical plotter would. I think those discoveries are some of the best parts of writing. I may have mentioned before on the last time I was with you, some of my favorite characters were happy accidents, including Milo, the spirit guide.
I love Milo, yes.
I'm not supposed to have favorites. They're like your children, right? You don't have favorites.
My sister reads your books. My wife reads your books. Everybody's favorite character is Milo. If you get rid of Milo, I'm telling you what, you're going to have people knock on your door.
Oh God! Can you imagine?
Oh my God! Yeah.
But he was a happy accident. He was one of those detours that I took that I wasn't, you know, he wasn't necessarily planned, but he showed up. He served a plotting purpose, but I looked at him and I was like, "You're coming along for the ride, right?" He insisted upon himself in a way that it's hard to explain to somebody who's not a writer how characters come to life so fully formed in your brain. Sometimes you feel like you can't possibly have had anything to do with it, right? Kind of makes you think like, is this a paranormal thing? Have I got some outside presence speaking in my ear here? You know,
my wife and I read before we go to bed every night, and she'll just start bursting out laughing. I says, Milo? She goes, yep. You know, so you know that. He had so much to the, in my opinion, you know, so much to the series. I know it's about Jess and Hannah and the sisters and Finn, and you know, you get interwoven with these characters, you know, but Milo was just like all, you know, you could probably do a whole series, you know, just on Milo. But yeah, knowing these characters, like they're like and if you're writing it, they're like family to you.
Yeah, they really are. You get attached to them. And the more you write them, the more their voices become clear in your head. And therefore, the easier it is to write them. So it was a really interesting experiment for me moving away from that series and writing something new after, you know, gosh, seven. So 10, after 10. 10 gateway books, is that right? Yeah, after that, those first 10 books, I took a break after that seventh.
So you wrote seven, you know, because that brought them all together at the end.
Yeah, I tried to end things in a way that, like, if I have to end things here, I feel good about it, right? I don't believe in closing doors all the way, right? Mm-hmm. I like, you know, I might shut the door for a while, but I'm not locking it, you know, I'm not stuck the door jam in it. Like, we can go back there if we want to. It was so interesting and such a challenge to then move to a totally different world, totally different characters. I moved from writing in the first person to writing in the third person. Mm-hmm. I moved from, you know, all of the Trackers books, all of the Gateway books are told from Jess's first person point of view. The Rift Magic books, I had, the first one has four different narrators interwoven together. And so writing from that perspective, just a totally different narrative structure, was very mean to myself. I should have eased into it with a little more narrative similarity, maybe gone easy on myself. But the truth was, that was the right structure for that project, and it was a great exercise for me as a writer to really expand the narrative structures that I was comfortable working with. And now I'm not afraid to dive back into that, which is nice.
In the first interview that your father used to bring home, like, legal pads and stuff that you could write on, and you would start your own little books with your blank books. I'm thinking, were your parents supportive, and did they have any idea that you had this knack for wanting to be a writer? I mean, even at a young age?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, they could definitely tell I had a passion for it. My parents are just, they're great. You know, they've always supported my passions. You know, I actually went to school for theater, not for writing. Although the two, as far as character building goes, as far as I'm concerned, the two work really well hand in hand by approaching character writing the way that I would approach character building from an actor perspective, I like to think helps me create more complete characters that hopefully come to life on the page as much as they would on a stage. But my parents have always been so supportive of my various creative endeavors. They're great. You know, my dad is you know, he's the first one to pre-order each new book. He's one of the first people to have it read, you know, when it gets downloaded, and it's great.
That's good that they're so supportive like that.
Yeah, it's always been, you know, it's been great. You know, of course they, you know, they want me to. It's scary when your kid tells you, "Oh, I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to be a writer." You're like, "Oh God," you know. You know, but like I said, they've always been so wonderful, and I've been really, really fortunate, really lucky, because you can really throw yourself into creative pursuits if you feel like you've got people behind you to back you up and support you.
Well, I'm going to take a short little break here, and I'll be right back with the rest of my conversation with E.E. Holmes right after these brief messages.
Are you looking for a new book to read? Check out my newest book, An Awakening, by Wendy M. Cope, last name spelled K-O-K. Basically, it's a story of good versus evil, and these things slowly start taking over the residents of this small northern town of Neillsville, Wisconsin, and I would love it if you would read it. My books are available on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Book Baby Bookshop, everywhere really, and you can find me at WendyMCopeAuthor.com.
Okay, welcome back. Welcome back, Emily. Thank you for coming on and sharing your stories and your knowledge of writing. Really, I mean, you got so much history under your belt with Gateway and all your other books, really. Again, I'm going to encourage my listeners to go down to the bottom of this episode, click on the links, and go check out everything that E.E. Holmes has to offer. Getting back to your writing process. Use like a notebook, computer, tablet, or like in the middle of the night, you just jot things on a piece of paper, posting notes. But I mean, what's your process?
Yeah, it is a little bit, I mean, it can be chaotic when you're coming up with ideas on the fly. I am a chronic buyer of notebooks. I do enjoy having lots of notebooks available to me. I don't write a lot by hand, but I do enjoy it. I always make sure I have something with me that I can jot something down if I need to. A lot of times that just winds up being my phone, right? Either the notes app or, you know, texting something to myself or emailing something to myself. But I do also, I utilize notebooks when I am drafting, like actually sitting down to write the book. I do have a writing software I use called Novlr, N-O-V-L-R. I enjoy it. It's online. It backs up everything automatically to your device and to the cloud. So everything's constantly being backed up, which is really nice. It allows you to, it's got some great drag and drop features with, you know, your chapters, having each chapter almost be like a separate document that you can go into, you can edit, you can rename, you can reorder them if you decide. That came in really useful for the Rift Magic books, because I was dealing with four different perspectives, four different narrators, and I wasn't always entirely sure which part of the story I wanted to tell in which order. And this allowed me to kind of drag and drop chapters into different orders and let me test out that structure and see how it worked for, you know, furthering the story. It allows me to export the chapters individually, which is great, because that tends to be when I'm working through my editing process and moving stuff from Novlr to Vellum, which is the program I use for formatting. It's helpful to be able to do that one chapter at a time instead of with one massive Word document, you know. That's typically what I will do. I'll draft in Novlr and then I'll export chapter by chapter to Vellum.
You publish yourself or do you go through a publishing house?
Yeah, so I am independently published. I'm an indie author. I do independently publish my books. I do have traditional publishing contracts for most of my audiobooks. And I also do have an agent. I think it's a good thing for authors to have as many irons in the fire as possible. Independent publishing is one end of the pool. Traditional publishing is the other end. I'm kind of working on getting a foot in both right now. Because it's like, you know, it's like anything else, right? Diversifying right. Your streams of income and all those kinds of things. You know, you don't want to have all your eggs in one basket. But yes, I am. All of my books thus far have been independently published.
You said before that I think your husband helped you out a lot on marketing part.
Oh, yes. Oh, he is just where we are. This is a two-man show over here, you know. I am writing the books, but a lot of the things that authors are not good at, like marketing and self-promotion and, you know, a lot of the back end nitty gritty stuff, that's the stuff he's good at. This is why we work well together as a couple, right? The left brain and the right brain, you know, he has been absolutely invaluable in helping me. He's really the one who said to me, you know, this isn't just a thing, a bucket list thing. He's like, this, you should be doing this all the time. He's the one who said, we can turn this into a business. We can turn this into your full-time job. Mm-hmm. And it was really, I of course wanted to write books and have books that the books that I wrote up on my bookshelf and be able to look at them and be like, I did it. Right. You know that. And he was the one who said, no, he was like, you can do a lot more than that. And he really, it was him. He pushed me. He really believed in me. It's hard to say to yourself, I'm good at this. I can do this. I can make this my job, right? Uh-huh. There's a lot of imposter syndrome involved with, you know, even 15 books later, I'm still, you know, I'll still sit there at my computer some days and say, this is it. This, I cannot write books. I 14 books is the number of books I had in me. The well has run dry. This is the time where I'm going to put one out and they're all going to say, she doesn't know what she's doing. This is terrible. You know, it's like, and I do that with every single.
Yeah. I don't think the well is running dry if you're coming up with a whole new series.
But you do, but it does though. You know, you have those moments where you just go, I've got nothing. I don't know why I think I can do this, but today I can't. But you got to remember, you know, each day you wake up, it's a new day. And
are you still teaching?
No, I am writing full time. I've been writing full time. Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Awesome. I've been writing full time since the end of the trilogy.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I see that you were the author of 3 one-act plays, one which appears at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, sure. I would love to. So I was working, when I first started working on my books, I was teaching full-time. I was a high school theater and English teacher. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I would write one-act plays for my students. As I said, you know, the theater and the writing, they always went very much hand in hand. You know, my senior thesis project in college was a one-act play that I wrote. It was an adaptation of a Shakespeare play, which I then turned around and performed with my students and took to the Massachusetts High School Drama Guild Festival. We got to the semifinals with that piece. So I oftentimes would combine writing and theater together, my two big loves, you know. And so our theater program, our high school theater program, was nominated to apply to be a part of the American High School Theater Festival at the Edinburgh Fringe, which, for people who aren't aware of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, it is just the most remarkable performing arts festival that happens every year for about 3 weeks in August in Edinburgh, Scotland. And it, oh my goodness, if you can put this on your bucket list, it is just the most remarkable experience. The entire city turns into a performance venue. I mean, it is unbelievable. You are walking down the street. There are street performers. There are plays happening on top of bars in pubs. There are flats where they've turned their living rooms into experimental theater spaces. I saw a play take place at a public pool.
Oh, awesome.
I mean, it was it's remarkable. There's so many things. So many of them are free, which is wonderful, because the city itself to stay there and be there is expensive during that time. So to have the tickets to individual things not be expensive is really nice. but you could literally, from dawn until 2 o'clock in the morning, you could be at a performance. You could see 50 different performances. I mean, it's just incredible. And so, yes, I wrote a children's play called Pandora's Book, about a little girl who walks into a magical bookshop and is told not to touch this particular book. And so, of course, when you tell a kid not to touch something, that is, of course, the one thing they will touch. And right. she, opens the book and all of the stories escape. And so she has to basically go into each story, become a part of each story, and live through the story in order to get the story back into the book. And so, and I pulled from a number of different folk tales. There's a Baba Yaga, a Russian folktale. There's Anansi the Spider, which is an African folktale. So there's different stories that got pulled into it. And I took a group of students to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival and we performed there. And we also, the trip actually started in London. We got to go to the Globe Theatre and see a performance at the Globe Theatre and do a bunch of, we did a workshop there. And then we took the train up to Edinburgh and we spent, you know, the week working on getting the show ready. And then we had performances and it was, you know, and anytime we weren't performing, we were all just off seeing as many shows as we possibly could. And it was fabulous.
Did you perform as well? Or did you like kind of direct the...
Yeah, I was the director. Yeah, no, I didn't perform. I would have loved to perform. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, I see a lot of British connections, even all through the gateways. When I read this, that you have a love for British shows.
Oh my goodness, yes.
What shows are we talking about?
Oh my gosh, so many.
Downton Abbey.
Oh, yes.
Benny Hill. This one that we listened to, The Crown, Sherlock Holmes.
And yes. Bridge,
I love Bridge Street. I don't know if you've seen that.
You know what? I haven't seen much Bridge Street. So yes, huge Anglophile. Like, I mean, from the time I was a kid, I was watching old episodes of Are You Being Served and The Vicar of Dibley and all of these, Fawlty Towers. I was from the age of 10, a diehard Monty Python fan, all the movies, the Flying Circus episodes, everything. And now I love a lot of British mystery shows. I like a lot of cozy mystery shows. I'm a big Father Brown fan. I'm a big Shakespeare and Hathaway fan. Have loved some sitcoms, more recent sitcoms and things. And of course, Downton Abbey is actually one of the very big inspirations for my Rift Magic books. I had watched every episode of Downton Abbey. I just absolutely devoured it. First couple movies, just, oh, I just loved it so much. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, I love this dynamic, right? The upstairs, downstairs dynamic. I love that, seeing the stories of the wealthy and then the stories of the people who serve them and the way that they're intertwined. And I thought, what if I did that, but with magic? And that's really where my brain started turning with the ideas for the Rift Magic. Wondering if I might want to try my hand at mystery. I've been doing a deep dive through Agatha Christie. I've been doing a deep dive through, there are some other really fun kind of period mystery series. Oh, what was the other one? The Australian one I just read. Of course, I'm not going to be able to think of the name of it, but I've been doing a deep dive through all of these mystery series. The Miss Fisher.
Okay.
The Fryn Fisher mysteries, those are super fun too. So I've been spending some time kind of in mystery kind of, and so Enola Holmes, Sherlock Holmes, all that stuff fits right into that. Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it.
How many times have you been to England, Scotland?
I have been to Scotland twice. I have been to England 3 times. I have not yet been to Ireland, but it's or Wales. But they're right up there on my list. I come from a very 100% Irish, so I'm very interested to get back there to my roots a little bit. And, I mean, I think that was part of why I have all of this Gaelic and all of this kind of tied in with the Gateway books too. It's like, you know, that's where my family heritage is from, and so I feel like when I get interested in, you know, British culture, Irish culture, Scottish culture, I really just feel like I'm digging back into my own roots there, which is also really nice for me.
I could see you retiring once your kids are grown out of the house, you living in England.
Oh God. Yeah. Oh yeah. Just get me that little cottage in the Cotswolds. Yeah. Oh yeah. That little cottage in the Cotswolds, you know, one of those little villages where you can get to England, where you can get to London on the train, but it's, you know, you're in the countryside and, you know, it's got a thatch roof and it's got a nice garden and something blossomy climbing up the front, and you'll never see me again. There I shall stay.
Yeah, that's on my bucket list. I haven't been there yet. but I, you know, just walking down the cobblestone streets of London, you know, I ever since I watched my very first Sherlock Holmes movie, I was like, I want to go there, you know.
Oh yeah.
And I just got a fascination of London, and not really, I mean, the whole country. I mean, you know, the countrysides and the castles and.
Oh my goodness. Yes. It's so beautiful. And it's so, I mean, it's the city of London itself is, it's so walkable and there's just so much to see. And it's like stepping back in time. It's just so fascinating. I love it. And I'm so lucky that I have so many British readers. Like it's really, it makes me so happy to know that I have readers there who can read my books and say, oh, you know, that they can still enjoy them instead of being like, oh, here's another American trying to pretend they know anything about England. You know, it's like, that's kind of like my biggest fear every time I dive into a new one is not being able to be an authentic enough voice. But I'm just so in love with the setting and I'm so in love with so much of it that it's hard for me not to set books there.
Do you follow anything with, like, say, the royal family, the crown? What's your take on that?
I haven't watched all the seasons of The Crown. I'm not like a huge royalist. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, like anybody else, you know, I pay attention to the big headlines, I suppose.
So I noticed they really follow that over there. I mean, they're really, I mean, it's big, big, big time. I mean, you would think that like in our country, if somebody, you know, they're not really running the country anymore. It's they're just, they're paid an enormous amount of money. Yeah, but the people love that history of.
Oh yeah, I mean there's it. I mean it goes back to, you know, it's like fairy tale culture, right? The idea of being a princess, of becoming royalty, right? Being plucked from obscurity and you know, and there's a certain amount of like we all kind of wish it could happen to us, you know, thing. Like you're going to meet this, you know, I mean, my goodness, how many Hallmark movies are there, right? Of you know, lowly governesses and whatnot who fall in love with the rich. So, I mean, it's like, you know, there's a fairy tale element to it. And I think in America, because we don't have a monarchy here, we tend to latch on to the monarchy that might have been, mm-hmm. right? If we had, you know, done that whole Revolutionary War thing.
Well, I'm just amazed with the knowledge you have of the, you know, the British background. I see it in your books. I mentioned the professor. He was in the trilogy, correct?
Yes, Professor Pierce.
Yeah, Pearson. Yeah, I love that you, because you know, being a paranormal investigator and following the paranormal, I think you did a great job on linking that in there, you know, with the paranormal, you know.
Yes.
What his take, and I was just blown away and I was reading this like, wow, you know, because you hit, I mean, a lot of different areas, you know, and you kind of tie them together and passing the spirit on.
Yeah, there's a lot of research involved. I mean, you can't, you know, you can have an interest in something, but if you're not going to take the time to kind of research it thoroughly and properly, you know, it's going to ring false. I made sure I took a lot of time. I mean, I watched every ghost hunting documentary I could get my hands on. I went to local presentations by ghost hunting groups, you know, where they would come to libraries and they would, you know, show their footage. They'd explain what they do. They'd have their equipment there. Mm-hmm. They'd let you handle it and see how it works. You purposely stayed in a number of places that are purported to be haunted, you know, just to have those experiences, you know, as a part of my own experience so that I could then turn around and hopefully write something that rang true to people who are a part of whatever that experience, you know, people who are really immersed in that. I mean, it's funny. I get emails. I have an email exchange sitting in my inbox right now this week from a woman who is a spiritualist and who says to me, I've recommended your books to all of my other friends who are involved in these groups. I mean, these are people who purport to have, and I don't, I mean, who am I to doubt them? I mean, my goodness, I mean, there's so much we don't understand. I consider myself an extremely open-minded person. I'd love for someone to be able to say to me, like, here's proof of ghosts. Like, that would be, you know what I mean? Like, I'm open to it. And so anytime anybody who whose own personal experience and personal gifts have drawn them into that subculture. I'm flattered and I'm so happy to know that people who are heavily involved in spiritualism, in ghost hunting, in paranormal subculture can read my books and have something about them ring true. Like that to me is so gratifying. It's what you hope for. You know, it's what you hope for when you write that your book speaks to people, but you want it to speak to the people that have had those same experiences. I mean, you're trying to connect to people. And so when those connections are made, it's wonderful.
Well, that's the part I love. You know, I think you did a great job on it. Before we get off here, what is on your bucket list? Any place you haven't been that you want to go, or what's on your bucket list?
So many places. Well, you know, so I've got small children at this point still. And so a lot of the bigger trips we've wanted to take, it still feels too hard to do, right? You know, I, of course, want to get back to the UK. I am dying to have an opportunity to do the London Book Fair, and the Edinburgh Book Festival actually happens at the same time as the Fringe. So I'm hoping to get back to the Fringe but also for the Edinburgh Book Festival. I really want to tour Ireland. Is big on my list. I haven't done any of continental Europe, so I'm very interested in that. I mean, traveling is something I just want to do as much of as I possibly can. I actually spent a good deal of time studying Balinese dance and theater in college, and so way at the top of my list is getting to Bali, because that is just a remarkably rich culture, art making culture, shadow puppetry, performance, dance, music. I took a semester of gamelan, learning how to play the gamelan orchestra. I would love to spend some time there. I mean, I just want to see as much of the world as I can while I can. Yeah. So I think travel is really, really big on my list. And as far as writing goes, bucket list wise, I would love to write a book and have it published traditionally, just to have that experience. I would love to get something adapted for TV or film. You know, I do have some irons in the fire as far as that goes, but it's a very long process. And it's a process that often, more often than not, just doesn't lead to anything, you know. And so, but I'm hoping at some point someone will take a look at these Gateway books or the Rift to Magic books and say, this should be on screen. I hear that a lot from readers. And so I hope that somebody on the film or television end of things sees it that way as well.
What's your plan for the rest of this year? I mean, you're going to finish, you said you're working on another.
I have another Trackers book that will be, it's called The City of the Forgotten. City of the Forgotten. It will be out, I want to say we've set a June. I think it's June. God, now I need to go look. I know it's coming up quick, deadline-wise for me. So I will be releasing another Trackers book this summer, and the plan will be toward the end of the year to release the first book in this new spin-off series centered on witchcraft that I was telling you about. And then in between there, I actually have some standalone book ideas, which I think might be better suited for the traditional space. And so I think I'm going to be working on getting a really solid start on one of those and hoping that my agent will be interested in shopping that out traditionally and just, you know, totally unrelated to Gateway, totally unrelated to Rift Magic and all of that. And just kind of walking down this new avenue a little bit and seeing what it's like getting into the trenches, so to speak, in trad pub. So hopefully I'll have some nice stories for you if we do this again in a year. Hopefully they won't be, hopefully they won't be war stories from Trad Pub, but we'll see.
Where can my listeners go to get a hold of your book, get information on you?
eeholmes.com is the best place to start. I've got a full reading order there. There's links to every version of every book. It gives them to you in the reading order. It divides them out by series. There's a pronunciation guide there. There's links to all of my socials. I'm on author E.E. Holmes. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. I'm not on Twitter that much, but you can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. I've even ventured into TikTok. You can find me on there. yeah, come say hi. And I encourage readers to drop me emails. I answer emails from readers myself. And so if anybody has a specific question or anything they want to follow up on, if you email me, I will actually get back to you myself. So
well, I look forward to getting the City of the Forgotten, and also I'm going to finish up the Coven, the Rise of the Coven.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on, Emily. Thank you very much for sharing your knowledge of writing and also sharing with us your characters and your massive brain that comes up with these.
Well, thank you so much. It's been lovely chatting with you. I really enjoy it so much. I love being able to talk about books and characters and, you know, talk shop, as it were. You know, writing is a very a lonely activity sometimes, and so being able to talk to people about it is really nice.
Thank you, E.E. Holmes, for being on the show today, and do check out her new book that was just released, Rise of the Coven, and there's a new one that should be available by the time this podcast airs, City of the Forgotten. I'll have her links below for the Gateway Trilogy series, the Gateway Tracker series, the Rift Magic Saga series, and everything else you need to know about Emily is at the bottom of this episode. I'm your host, Al Cooley. I'll see you in 2 weeks with another great episode on Ghosts in the Valley podcast.